A few weeks ago, I asked the question, how long would it take for someone to report you missing? Most of you thought it would be within a day. Now I want you to think about what circumstances would be necessary for it to take longer than that. In Marcia's life, she had become isolated from many people, and we'll learn about the effects of that today. But it wasn't only her isolation that influenced the lack of report. It was also a trauma that Marcia's long-distance best friend, Kim, endured at the exact time that she stopped hearing from Marcia. Kim regrets that she had become so disconnected that she did not realize Marcia was gone. Eventually, it would be Marcia's hairdresser who reported her disappearance to law enforcement. Best friend Kim told me,
it was a nightmare. And looking back, I hate that. I hate that it was her hairdresser at the end of the day that reported her missing. I hate that.
Last week, we discussed Marcia's timeline from January through April 2009. Today, we'll examine the last month of her life, May 2009. Welcome to Targeted, True Crime Podcast. We tell stories of those who were targeted by abuse and investigate cases of family violence, using academic research to interpret the events. As a college professor, I think we need to stop making family violence a secret. It's time to tell our stories, use our experiences to help, heal, and provoke change. Targeted discusses sensitive information about abuse. Listener discretion is advised. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. May 2009. Early in May, Marcia gave a check to an insurance agent, Tom Kay, but I don't know what kind of insurance. He seems to be the kind of agent who would write up policies for home, car, liability, or life insurance. This insurance will come up again at the end of the month. Marcia started taking hormones again, keeping careful notes about which ones she should take when. She skipped the Knoxville Writers Guild meeting in May, but attended the Chattanooga chapter. She may have attended the Chattarosa group as well. On May 10th, Marcia wrote her only blog entry for the month, one which ended up being her last. She wrote about going to see the movie Star Trek with her husband. She ends the post with her final published words,
"Brantley out,"
which is what I named this mini-series after. Then, on May 27th, 2009, Marcia attended a writing workshop in Knoxville, about an hour and a half drive away, where she'd get a chance to learn from other authors and workshop some of her own writing. She drove up alone this time, and from what I can ascertain from combining news reports and my interview with her longtime friend Kim, Marcia used this long trip to catch up with Kim on her new phone. Donnie had recently surprised Marcia with the phone, one that came with a new phone number. Because the new phone later raised suspicions, as many people didn't have Marcia's new phone number, I wondered what Marcia thought about her new phone.
It didn't seem odd at the time. She took it as it was a nice gift. Hey, Donnie bought me a brand new phone. But yeah, she was excited about it, said it was a nice phone. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's great. That's cool.
Marcia and Kim were also discussing a planned joint family vacation, and both were looking forward to seeing each other soon. Although Marcia and her friend Kim had tentative plans to camp together in June, they had not yet firmed up the final details. Let's hear Kim talk about it.
We were going to meet. They had a big six-wheel camper, and they camped all the time in like Townsend and Gatlinburg. And we were going to go and meet them. My family was going to get a cabin. They were going to camp in the camper. And we were just going to meet up and spend the week there in June. I think it was like the 23rd of June that year we were supposed to go. And she had told me that around that time, he had booked the trip. And so she had let me know, and the last time we spoke, it let me know the date to make sure my husband could get off work that week and make sure we could go. We had spoken at the end of 1 week, and she said, call me by the first of next week and let me know if that's okay. Okay, talk to you then.
The phone call ended as Marcia went into the writer's group meeting. In a little bit, we'll talk about why the vacation with Kim didn't happen and why Kim didn't sound an alarm when she never heard from Marcia again. After the writer's workshop, Marcia had hoped that another long-distance friend, Heather, would be coming to visit Marcia at her house in Cleveland that last weekend in May. Unfortunately, Heather had to cancel her trip when her military schedule intervened. I briefly messaged with Heather to get that basic information I just said, but I haven't been able to interview her yet. We tentatively have plans to speak in a couple weeks once she's completed a move that she's in the middle of right now. So when Marcia returned to Cleveland, Tennessee after the workshop, she was a bit disappointed that she wouldn't be with her friend. She was also vexed by another issue. Something had happened with her insurance, and she had had to call several times over the week to work it out. She marked in her calendar every time it was not satisfactorily resolved. The first entry says,
no insurance card. Tom K., Casualty Service, says on vacation. Message left. No response.
A couple days later, Marcia writes,
Tom K. contacted and says cards will be mailed today.
A few days after that, on May 29th, Marcia writes,
no insurance cards. Tom K. contacted, said would fax card to us. No cards faxed.
There's something else, but it's a bit hard to read, and it's unclear if it had to do with the insurance card or not. I think it might say,
V's phone number disconnected.
Or,
Fair's phone number disconnected.
The last time she writes about this is Saturday, May 30th, when she scribbles something I can't read and then writes, in capital letters,
no insurance.
What does all this mean? I don't know, to be honest. But it points to some kind of trouble with insurance that she was trying to work out. I asked the family and law enforcement, but didn't get much help from them. One person vaguely said that the insurance issue was resolved, and when I probed, indicated that it was about life insurance. When I asked for more detail, the person politely declined. The feeling I was left with was that the details of this contained some type of holdback evidence. So, I wonder. The fact that Marcia was investigating the insurance is not a secret, because I found the information in publicly available photographs of her calendar. But perhaps what she discovered is evidence. Marcia also had another unpleasant situation to deal with in her final days. Donnie, her husband, had a big talk with her. Let's listen to what he said in a deposition that he gave in 2013.
She left that day because I came to her and told her the business was failing and we needed to take some more money out, and she left for that reason.
On the last day he saw her, he told her the business was failing. That's the handyman business. He says this is why she left him. No one I could find admits to contact with Marcia after May 30th, 2009. I haven't been able to contact Donnie personally. I have messaged his daughter, hoping to reach him that way, but she has not responded. The first week in June, best friend Kim called Marcia numerous times to finish planning their vacation, but strangely, Marcia never responded, which was very unlike her.
She had told me she was going to be going out of town. She had a writer's conference. If I didn't reach her, to keep trying, because she always called me back. If we didn't reach each other, we always called each other right back.
And then Kim's life fell apart at the very same time that Marcia's life inexorably changed.
My life went completely sideways in the course of a couple weeks back then. And when I tell you my life went sideways, my life went sideways. Had that not happened, I would have probably been really vigilant to try to figure out why in the hell is she not calling me back.
For Kim, it was a deep family trauma in the beginning of June that came out of nowhere and completely upended her life. No longer did she want to talk to Marcia about a vacation, but she needed to talk to Marcia about what was happening in her life. Marcia was silent, though, and offered her no support, no contact, no communication to help her friend.
You know, why is she not contacting me? I was even emailing her and leaving her voicemails at that point going, hey, I need to talk to you. We're not going on this trip. We can't go. I can't leave town. I need to talk to you. And I was getting nothing back from her, which bothered me. And I didn't know why. But to be honest, I didn't have time to figure out why.
Kim did keep trying to reach Marcia for a while. I asked her what she thought when she didn't hear back from Marcia.
At that point, I didn't know what to think. They didn't have a landline number that I knew of. I only contacted her by cell, and I didn't have his cell. And that's why I didn't pursue it more. But I knew something was wrong. I knew something was. I didn't know if maybe she was sick and didn't want to tell me. Yeah, I didn't know. And I didn't know what to do. I only had her number. I only had her email. Her parents were dead. And I didn't know her other family at the time to reach them. I was in my own private hell.
While Kim's family trauma is private, I know enough to confirm that it was devastating and explains why she didn't pursue Marcia in a way that would have revealed Marcia's disappearance much earlier. She didn't get why Marcia wasn't responding to help her out, but she didn't have the wherewithal to deal with it either. Kim has a lot of regret that she wasn't able to connect the dots herself and alert the police. She recognizes that some people blame her as being an unconcerned friend. I don't think she was that, though. She simply didn't have the spoons. I'm not sure if you've heard of the spoon theory before, but it is an analogy that is used to help survivors better understand and process what they are literally capable of doing. I first learned of it from my sister-in-law, who has a serious medical condition. Here's the basic idea as described in Happyful Magazine. Each day, somebody has a set amount of spoons or energy that they can use throughout a day. Let's say when we wake up, we have 10 spoons of energy. That means we can do as much activity as 10 spoons will allow, but after that, we don't function well. A healthy person can parse out their energy, their spoons, throughout the day pretty easily. For a survivor, though, those 10 spoons can go pretty quickly. It may take one spoon to get out of bed, another spoon to eat breakfast, two spoons to take a shower and blow dry their hair, and another spoon to get dressed. Before the person has even set foot outside of their front door, half of their energy for the day is already gone because half of their spoons have already been spent. That means the person has to be careful with how they spend the rest of their spoons, or else they aren't going to be able to cope well throughout the day. The spoon analogy helps survivors to avoid a self-blame game of, you should have done more, and recognize that they have limits and accept those limits and be able to use their energy wisely. I truly think that Kim's spoons were full with her personal trauma. In fact, she was probably running on deficits at this time and just making it through each day, knowing that the next would continue to bring untold complications in her own life. She didn't have enough spoons to investigate why one of her best friends seemed to be ignoring her. She had to use her spoons just to deal with the trauma. So, Kim wasn't the one to raise the alarm about Marcia. And you can hear the emotion in her voice about this. I played a clip at the beginning of the show, but I'd like you to hear it now in this context.
It was a nightmare. And looking back, I hate that. I hate that it was her hairdresser at the end of the day that reported her missing. I hate that.
Kim wasn't the only one who had plans with Marcia in June that never worked out. Reggie, the Thunder Rock writer we met earlier, had plans to go to the Mountain Heritage Literary Festival at Lincoln Memorial University in Tennessee the weekend of June 12th. They had made the plans before Marcia left the writing group, and Reggie was looking forward to finally seeing Marcia again and being able to catch up.
We were supposed to go to a writer's group conference. She and I were scheduled to go, and we were scheduled to go together and share a room together. And I contacted her before that. I tried to call and send a text to say, you know, are we still going driving together? There was no answer. So I go myself and get there, and she never showed up. The organizer of the conference came to me and said, hey, your roommate has not shown up. I was surprised, and the whole weekend she didn't show up.
While Reggie was surprised and concerned, it was also tempered with the memory that Marcia had made a definite move to cut her ties with the group. Even so, she tried to contact Marcia as the conference ended.
So as I'm leaving that Sunday, I call her and say, hey, Marcia, I'm concerned you didn't come. I leave a voicemail, and is everything okay? If you want to, you know, get the notes from the conference, let me know. Of course, I never heard anything, and that was very disconcerting.
Even though Marcia had missed two trips with friends, hopefully you understand how the combination of isolation and trauma played into the lack of report. I spoke with a number of Marcia's friends from various periods of her life, and candidly, it was not an unusual pattern for Marcia to have close friends during one period, but to disengage from them when she moved on to a different part of her life. While we're being candid, I apologize for this episode being shorter than anticipated. I had surgery a couple days ago, and I'm not quite recuperated enough to finish this one as I'd planned. I'm doing okay, but I'm exhausted, and my bed is calling to me. Don't worry, you'll get to hear it all soon enough, just not today. So I'm going to wrap it up here and say that without close friends or her husband to report her missing, it took others who were more on the periphery to piece it together. Join us next week as we learn about Marcia. We'll talk to a neighbor and her hairdresser to trace how they pieced together the information that eventually led to contacting authorities.
So I called the police department, and whoever answered, you know, a nice gentleman. I have nothing against him. You know, it was a strange call to get. And I said, you know, I've got a strange story to tell you, but, you know, bear with me. And I told him, and he said, I'm sorry. And who are you again? Are you her sister, her mother? And I said, no, actually, I'm her hairdresser.
Join us next week as we continue to remember Marcia.
And I remember Marcia. I remember her. She was such a sweet little girl.
I remember Marcia was a very kind and loving person.
I can remember. I had so much fun with Marcia.
I remember Marcia. She was calm, cool, and collected.
I remember Marcia.
I remember her.
I remember Marcia.
I remember Marcia.
I remember laughing. We laughed a lot.
Thanks so much for joining us at Targeted True Crime Podcast. If you're interested in my sources or research, I include a bibliography on my website, www.targetedpodcast.com. If you want to support the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and writing a sentence or two about what you like. If you want to connect on social media, I'll include links in the show notes. If you'd like to reach me via email, you can do that at targetedpodcast@gmail.com. Please stay tuned for promos at the end of the podcast and check them out if they sound interesting. As we end, let me emphasize that if you or someone you know is a survivor of domestic violence, you are not alone. There are resources available to you. I've included some contact information in the show notes and on the website about a few organizations. Leaving an abusive relationship can be one of the most dangerous times for a target, so I strongly encourage you to reach out for support. Getting help may be the hardest thing you'll ever do, but it will be worth it. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. Peace, my friends. Peace.
Hi, everyone.
I'm Ariel Cooksey, host of Malice. When violent acts occur, we tend to think the predators are monsters. Surely no human could do such things. But if we're honest, only humans commit malicious crime. And if you're like me, you want to know why. To find out, join me at Malice, wherever you listen to podcasts. Bye.